Well, hello there, and welcome to the Good Old Days of Radio Show. This is John Tifteller, your host. We are on episode number 7 of a 10-week salute to the great mystery writer Cornell Woolrich. And most of Cornell Woolrich's stories were adapted for radio on Suspense. And so we have a lot of suspense. We are going to vary that with one show as we get to episode number 9. One show, you'll get to hear something other than Suspense. And it's a great one, too. But anyway, most of them were suspense. And as a consequence of that, we have our resident expert on suspense, who really has spent a gob of time coming up with facts and figures and trivias and stories, and it's endless what he's been able to find out about the show and the background and all of that. Dr. Joe Webb, he's here to help guide me through things I know nothing about or know very little about. And we're having a great time sort of kibitzing back and forth about a bunch of different things, from Blu-rays and DVDs to movies and whatever else. But we're getting it done, and we hope we're entertaining in the process. So today is going to be a lighthearted one, at least somewhat lighthearted. The title doesn't sound like it would be, but when you get into the story, it is kind of lighthearted. Dr. Joe describes it as a funny episode. Well, okay, I get it. It's got elements of humor in it. This is called Postmortem. It stars Agnes Moorehead along with Joe Kearns. Joe Kearns was the man in black in the earlier episodes of Suspense, but Joe Kearns appears everywhere. Joe Kearns was like this guy that would show up, especially on Suspense, in all kinds of little minor roles here, there, and everywhere. And he was also on lots of other radio programs, too. I can't imagine there were too many people that had more regular gigs in radio than Joe Kearns. And, of course, he went on to play Mr. Wilson on the Dennis the Menace show. So for you younger people who know the Dennis the Menace TV show, and, of course, that's now 50 years ago, but you younger.
But it is available on Blu-ray DVD.
It is.
Just
okay.
Thought I'd mention that.
I would imagine it would be. Good. Go out and buy it. Don't depend on some streaming service to botch it up for you. Go out and buy it. Okay. Anyway, today is Postmortem, and what do you have to say about that, Dr. Joe?
Okay. This story was not really that funny in print.
I would say not.
Suspense made it funnier.
Okay.
It's funny in a strange way, but it's also funny. When you listen to some of this, it's funny.
Okay.
But there are people then and also now who are Woolrich fans who really don't like this episode. I think it's just absolutely marvelous. Here's the basic story. A woman has news reporters outside her home trying to cover a story that she won $150,000. And that's a little over $2.5 million in today's money.
Okay? Yeah, that's so right. Think about
remember
that.
Remember the inflation thing going on here.
$150,000 is about $2.5 million in today's money.
She never entered the contest, so she's very confused by this, but she remembers that her deceased husband did, and the winning ticket is probably in his suit pocket in the coffin underground.
Yeah, now this sounds like a kind of a wry episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Yes. it was done in Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, it was? Okay, yes. See? I'm pretty good guessing these things, even though I had no idea that was the case.
Yes, it was done on May 18th, 1958.
And, of course, he knows the date, too. He knows the date it was done. Pretty
Thank
amazing.
For IMDb, right?
Yeah, it's like we have Kreskin right, here. Anybody know who Kreskin was?
Yes, I know who Kreskin was. Yes. Okay. So this is not a spoiler alert, but here's one of the complicating factors. She got married again. She married the insurance agent who sold her husband the life insurance policy.
Uh-oh, that's a bad sign. Not to give any spoilers, of course.
And the insurance agent is against retrieving the body to get the lottery ticket.
And we will find out why.
Would he, yes. Why would he be against that? All right. Why would he not want the body exhumed? All right. So that's an undercurrent in the story. Agnes Moorhead is great. We think of her in the much more serious roles. She's good in this. The person who's not pleased with the story is the biographer of Woolrich, Francis Nevins.
And why?
Well, this is his quote, and this quote comes from there's a marvelous suspense blog. It's not been kept up, but Christine Miller was one of the people who inspired me on my own suspense project, and so she did some of the research and she got the biography of Woolrich by Nevins, and this is what Nevins says. He says it was the worst of all suspense's Woolrich based plays. As Woolrich wrote it, the story was an uncomfortable mix of serious and grotesquely comic elements, but it wasn't improved by the suspense adapter's decision to play the whole show for laughs. So who was the adapter? Bob Tolman, who's been adapting a lot of these and who was a writer for Sam Spade, which, of course, was its own tongue-in-cheek series.
Of course. What did they expect? And Sam Spade is always tongue-in-cheek.
Exactly. I find the whole thing to be very entertaining, and I really like it a lot.
Now, yeah, I liked it. I liked it, too.
So the original story was 1940 in Black Mask. I believe I mentioned that. It was also done on the suspense television series. Now, that is still available on DV, but it's out of print, so to speak.
Well,
but
you can find it on eBay or somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. One of the things that you find, and this is the power of radio, even though television was very primitive at that time when it was done on the suspense television series, which is the early 1950s. You could see what problems they have in recreating all of the scenes and all of the excitement of this story. They tried to do adaptations of other very successful suspense radio scripts on the suspense TV show, and the technology and the space required to do that just they don't resonate the same way that the radio program does.
Yeah, I have so DVD set. I think there's two sets, two volumes or something like that. And yeah, I've watched
three volumes. Yeah.
Okay, three volumes. I've watched a few of them and they're interesting, but none of them do I really want
to
watch.
That's a good way to put it.
None of them do I really want to watch again. So it's like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they're interesting. Yes. So, but that is available for people to view. So anyway, so my point is that these radio programs are very, very special in the way they are. And this one, and when you imagine all these people running around trying to figure out what to do about this, it just comes to life more in audio than it does in the full.
Oh, definitely. It's much, much easier to paint that picture in your mind than try to actually create it on film. Definitely.
Yeah. So I think we're ready to go in. I have some interesting stuff at the end for us. So let's dig into, now that the pre-mortem is done, let's go to post-mortem.
We've done the pre-mortem. Okay. April 4th, 1946. Maybe they did this as an April Fool's joke or close to it. But anyway, April 4th, 1946, post-mortem, written by Cornell Woolrich, adapted by Robert Tallman, and starring Agnes Moorhead and Joseph Kearns. Here we go.
Now, Roma Wines. R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you the MGM star, Miss Agnes Moorhead, in Postmortem, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer. Suspense. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glass full would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Agnes Moorhead in a remarkable tale of suspense.
land. Up with the buttercups, come on, get up, here comes the sun. Good morning, darling.
Stephen, you goose.
Your coffee, madame.
My stars and crown, I wish you wouldn't insist on my having coffee in bed, Stephen. It makes me feel like a loose character, just like the old days when I was in the theater.
Coffee in bed, then a long soak in the tub under the sun lamp. That's old Doc Archer's prescription for those aches and pains of yours.
Oh, but I haven't had any aches and pains for weeks now.
There, that proves it. You can't afford to stop the treatment now. Besides, you look beautiful with a suntan.
Well, if that's the case, have some coffee with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 9 o'clock.
The train doesn't leave till 9:22.
Ah, but the early bird gets the seat, my precious. Oh, yeah. I'll just start the water running and set up the lamp for you, my dear.
You needn't go to all that bother.
How do you like your water this morning? Warm, lukewarm, hot?
Warm.
Oh, I'm setting the lamp for 10 minutes. Mind you don't take too much now.
All right, dear. All right, all right.
If you get in the bath just as you hear me close the front door, you'll get just the right amount of sunshine.
Oh, really, Stephen?
Now, where's my goodbye kiss?
Stephen, I...
Huh? Bye now.
Bye, Stephen.
Up with the buttercups. Come on, get up, and here comes the sun.
Oh, it feels so good to get into a nice warm bed. Oh. Yes? Is that you, Stephen? Stephen, have you forgotten something again? Stephen, will you answer me? Can you hear me now, Stephen?
Oh, I forgot my wallet. I think it's in my bathrobe pocket on the inside of the door.
Oh, I'll hand it out to you.
No. Stay where you are. I'll just reach around and get it.
Stephen, don't open that door. The lamp, Stephen. Oh, see what you've done.
Oh, gosh, I hope I didn't break it.
Oh.
Say, these things are expensive. Hey, you didn't even have it turned on.
Well, I turned it off so you could hear me. That timer on it makes so much noise.
Well, no harm done, I guess. I've got everything now. Sorry to disturb you, darling.
Well, you better hurry. You'll miss that train.
Bye-bye, darling. Be good now.
Go on. Get out of here.
Okay, bud. Bye. At the window.
Oh, now what? All right. I'm coming. Oh, catch my death of cold. Oh, well, you don't have to burn up the battery. Oh, my robe.
Mrs. Meade?
Oh, I don't want any today. What was that you called me?
Are you Mrs. Josephine Meade?
Well, I was. My name is Archer now. I've remarried. What was it?
This is the place, fellas.
Hold everything. We're coming.
But who are those men? Who are you?
Hey, does she know yet?
Hold that, will you, Mrs. Meade? Hold it. All right, fine. Now let's try another one inside. Maybe in the kitchen, huh?
All right.
What were you doing? Fixing breakfast for your husband?
I'll put the camera away. Can't you see she doesn't know yet?
She don't know yet?
Haven't you been listening to the radio, Mrs. Meade?
No, a tube's burned out. Why?
She really don't know yet.
For heaven's sake, will you tell me what it is?
Aren't you going to ask us in?
Well, I shouldn't,
well,
but
I...
Now, your husband, madam, it'd be
My husband, but he just left the house. Oh, has something happened to him?
No, we got news for you, Mrs. Meade.
I wish you'd stop calling me Mrs. Meade. My name is Archer now. I explained that to this man here.
Westcott's my name, Paul Westcott. I'm from the Evening Bulletin.
You're a newspaper man.
Yeah.
Oh, my stars and crown. I haven't been interviewed by the press since I opened in Bright Eyes in New Haven 20 years ago.
You were an actress?
Well, I gave up my career after I married Mr. Meade. I often thought I might go back to the theater, but things didn't work out that way.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting, Mrs. Archer, but about the news we were going to tell you.
Oh, don't tell her. Make a guess.
Well, please, I...
Can't you guess?
No, and I wish
I'll give you a hint. It's the day the Derby is run off.
Derby?
Now, can't you guess why we're here? Your horses come in first.
Oh, you must have the wrong party. I don't own any horses.
No. Don't you understand? The news just came over the ticker from London. You're one of the three Americans to hold a ticket on Ravenel in the sweepstakes.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
Don't you understand? You've won $150,000.
$150,000? My stars and crown.
What's the matter? Don't that make you happy?
Boy, what a caption. Housewife wins sweepstakes. Must be a mistake, she says.
Oh, no, yeah. No. There really must be some mistake somewhere. It must be somebody else by the same name. You see, I haven't any ticket on... I haven't any ticket at all.
Well, sure, you must have. Where'd they get your name and address from otherwise? They don't just make up those things out of thin air. What are you trying to do, kid?
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You say the winning ticket is in the name of Meade?
Yes, Mrs. Josephine Meade. You said that was your name.
Then it must have been my late husband who bought the ticket.
Huh?
You see, the house is in my name, and I stayed on here after I lost Harry and after my marriage to Mr. Archer.
Oh, well, that's all right. Meade bought the sweepstakes ticket in your name. Anyway, you're the winner.
But I don't even have the ticket.
You don't have it.
You mean it's lost?
I never even knew he bought one till now. He never said a word to me about it. He died quite suddenly, you see.
Well, gee, you better look around good and see if you can find it.
Yeah, you can't collect the money without it.
You got any of your late husband's effects around the house, Mrs. Archer?
No, they've all been disposed of, but I went through everything very carefully. If there'd been anything there, even sewn into the lining of one of his suits, I'd have found it.
Now, think, Mrs. Archer, if your late husband never told you about it, he must have been intending to surprise you in case it won anything. So he would have put it somewhere where you wouldn't be likely to find it, wouldn't he?
Well, he would in any case. I didn't approve of his gambling.
All right, now, Mrs. Archer, think hard. Wasn't there a suit he didn't wear very much? One you might not have sent out since the ticket was bought? Put away in mothballs, maybe?
There was his dark blue.
His dark blue.
He'd only worn that once or twice. I never looked there. You see, I sent all his other clothes to the Russian War Relief, but the dark blue was in such good condition it was practically new, Mr. Westbrook.
Well, that's where that ticket is. I'll bet any amount it's in that dark blue suit. Let's have a look right now.
Well, I'm afraid that's not possible.
Not possible.
Oh, really, Mrs.
Because that's the suit Mr. Meade was buried in.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Agnes Moorhead in Postmortem, a radio play by Robert Tallman from the story by Cornell Woolrich. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Evenings at home can be dull as dishwashing or friendly as a fireside, depending upon the ingenuity of the lady of the house. Well, here's a simple suggestion many smart American homemakers follow to brighten stay-at-home nights. As a high spot in a quiet evening of restful reading or listening to favorite radio shows, serve Roma California Sherry. For Roma Sherry helps an evening along, adds a welcome note of warmth to friendly companionship. Yes, there's something about glowing golden amber Roma Sherry with the rich, mellow, nut-like taste that everyone enjoys. Roma Sherry, the favorite of millions as first call for dinner, is a delightful entertainment wine, too. So delicious with cheese and crackers or any simple snack. And Roma brings you a glorious sherry that is unvaryingly fine, bottled at the famous Roma Winery in California, to assure you, sealed in goodness always. Give your family a pleasant surprise with fine Roma Sherry tomorrow. Delicious, easy to serve, so inexpensive. Remember, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
Now, Roma
insist
wine.
On Roma Wines. R-O-M-A.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Agnes Moorhead as Josie Archer, with Joseph Kearns as Stephen, in Postmortem, a tale well calculated to keep you in...
suspense!
So you see, Stephen, that's the only place it can be. It's there in the... casket with him.
What makes you so certain of that?
Well, the one and only time he wore that suit before his death was one Saturday afternoon when he went out for a stroll and stopped in at a pool room.
Mm.
What more likely place than that for him to have bought a sweepstakes ticket?
Well, if it's buried with him, we might as well kiss it goodbye.
But $150,000,
Stephen! You haven't any right to disturb a grave just on a hunch like that. And anyway, Harry might have lost the ticket.
Oh, I tell you, I knew Harry. Meade no more lose a thing like that than... Well, he just wouldn't, that's all.
Well, if it's there, it'll just have to stay
but
there.
Why, Stephen? All we have to do is get a court order
I tell you, I won't stand for it. It's sacrilege.
we've got to disturb the dead, we'll just have to let the money go.
But it wouldn't be like desecrating a grave. Harry would have wanted us to have that money. After all, you were his best friend.
Now, look, Josie, as your husband, I forbid you to disturb that man's remains.
But, Stephen, really,
forget that there ever was such a sweepstakes ticket. Is that understood now?
Well, all right, Stephen.
Yes.
Whatever you say.
And if that snooping newspaper man comes back here, you're not to let him in this house.
Yes, Stephen.
Is that a promise?
Yes, Stephen, it's a promise.
Well, I've got to go now or I'll miss my train. We'll talk about it some more tonight when I get home.
All right, dear.
Don't forget to take your sun lamp treatment.
No, I won't. Bye now.
Goodbye, dear.
Oh. Hello? Oh, Mr. Westcott. No, I have not reconsidered. I definitely have not reconsidered. Stephen and I have talked it over, and he's deeply shocked, and so am I. I must confess at the very suggestion of disinterring poor Harry. Now, you'll simply have to go elsewhere for your front page scoop, because I'm absolutely adamant on this point, and no amount of persuasion will make me change my mind. Doing this. I know it. I shouldn't be doing this.
Yes,
there's
Mrs.
something that tells me.
All right, you wait here, Mrs. Archer.
I shouldn't be doing this. I know I shouldn't.
Now, don't take it like that, Mrs. Archer. We have a court order all properly signed and perfectly legal.
Well, I shouldn't have let you talk me into this. I'm just weak, that's all. I'm just weak. Stephen is sure to suspect something.
That 150 grand ought to go a long way toward making him forgive you.
Well, we'll... Will it take long?
No, the workman is supposed to have it all ready. All that has to be done now is... Well, it won't take long. Would you rather wait in the caretaker's house?
No, I'll come along with you.
All right. Oh, there.
Huh? Oh, are you Mr. Westcott?
Yep.
Well, there it is, Mr. Westcott. We hoisted it up, but we didn't open it yet.
Here's the authorization. Pry the lid off of there. Make it snappy, will you?
All right. You take that in, Jack.
Okay.
All right.
What's the matter? Is it stuck or what?
Take it easy, lady, will you? It's coming.
Here you are, mister. It's all yours.
Hold this light for me, will you? Keep it off the face.
What's he doing now?
Frisking the corpse.
Oh.
And don't ask me why.
Oh, dear.
Get that
me.
Light off his face, will you?
Sensitive type.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. I got what I came for. Oh, please, get that light off his face.
Okay, mister, okay.
Hey, if you're all finished, we'll tuck him in again.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Put the light back on him. On his face.
Now, on his face. Hey, what's a big idea?
Oh, Harry.
Okay, you can douse that light now. Now, listen, you guys. Leave this just as it is. And stick right here until you hear from me.
How come?
What's the matter, Mr. Westcott?
I'm not sure yet, but I've just got a hunch the DA is going to want an autopsy on this body.
My stars and crowns.
Hey, what's this? Up and dressed already?
Well, I bought some things in town yesterday afternoon. The delivery man usually comes around 10 o'clock, so I thought I'd put off my sun lamp and bath until then.
Oh, but you will take your treatment then, promise me?
All right, darling, but really you worry too much about me.
You must have come in awfully late last night. Did you see the show through twice?
Stephen, I didn't go to a picture last night. Oh. I did what you told me not to.
What are you talking about?
Here it is, Stephen, $150,000.
You stupid little fool!
Stephen, let go of my shoulder. You're hurting me.
Who's with you? Who saw it beside you?
Nobody, Stephen. I got the permit and took it out there, and he showed it to the man in charge of the grounds, and he got a couple of workmen.
All right, go on.
Oh, one of them got it out of the vest pocket,
yes.
And then they put the lid on again and lowered it and covered it up.
You're sure everything was put back again, just the way it was?
Why, yes, Stephen, of course.
Well, I just hate to think he wasn't put back properly.
Oh, then you aren't angry with me?
I guess I acted pretty silly about it. I thought... I don't know what I thought.
Stephen! Stephen, You didn't suspect me of having anything to do with Harry dying so sudden.
Oh, why, of course not. What an idea. Look, you better give me that ticket for safekeeping. Well, I'll put it in the safe down at the office till you're ready to turn it in. Oh,
that's a wonderful idea, Stephen. It makes me nervous having it around the house. $150,000, Stephen. Just think of it. Oh.
Harry's been pretty good to us, hasn't
he? Oh, don't say things like that, Stephen.
I'm sorry. Oh, Lord, it's nearly 10 o'clock. I've missed my train.
Well, if you hurry, you can catch the 10:15.
Suppose so. You won't forget your sunlight.
I'll start it at 10:15 sharp, I promise.
Oh, I'm sorry to be such a Dutch uncle, darling, but I do worry about you.
You're wonderful to me, Stephen.
Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Stephen. Be careful, darling. Come in quickly. He just this minute left the house.
I suppose he took the ticket with him.
How did you know?
I know a lot of things.
For instance?
The DA's ordered that autopsy on the body of your late husband.
By stars and crow.
I think they'll find out he was murdered.
No. No.
Your present husband, Stephen Archer, is an insurance agent, isn't he?
Why, yes,
but... And he insured your late husband heavily in your favor just before his death.
Well, that doesn't prove anything.
Well, maybe not. He's pretty good to you, isn't he? Takes you to Florida every winter, stuff like that?
Oh, I should say not. How did you get such an idea?
That coat of tan you've got.
Oh, that? Oh, that's from the sun lamp. I had a slight cold a while back, and now Stephen insists that I use the sun lamp for 10 minutes every morning while I'm in the bath.
While you're in the bath?
He says it's more beneficial that way. It's a terrible nuisance, of course. The bathroom's quite small, and the lamp is always toppling over and falling on top of me.
How's that?
Well, I always wait till Stephen has left the house in the morning to take my bath, and then he almost always forgets something at the last minute and comes dashing back and blundering in the bathroom, and over it goes.
What sort of things does he forget?
Oh, well, one day a clean handkerchief, and the next some papers or other things that he needs, or his fountain pen.
Does he keep all those things in the bathroom?
Oh, no, but he can never find where they are, so he comes barging into the bathroom to ask me, and then over goes the lamp.
You don't say. I suppose you're insured pretty heavily in his favor now.
Well, naturally, being in the business.
Yes, naturally.
Mr. Westcott, you don't think...
I don't think anything yet.
Oh, dear, whatever shall I do?
I'll tell you what, there's a way to find out if you'll cooperate with me. With your acting experience, this ought to be easy for you. Now, this is what I want.
Stephen, this is Mr. Westcott. He's with the bulletin.
And what can we do for you, Mr. Westcott?
I stopped in the district attorney's office on my way here, Mr. Archer. They've just completed an autopsy on the body of Harry Meade.
Josie!
It wasn't my idea, Stephen. Believe me, it wasn't.
You understand, of course, I'm not with the police. I'm in this for a news story or anything else that might come my way.
I see.
I might be able to help you people if you'll tell me the truth.
What was the result of the autopsy?
The report isn't made out yet, but I think they'll find he died of a blow over the head.
Sit down, Mr. Westcott. I might as well tell you everything.
Josie, you don't have to tell this man
anything.
Stephen,
let me do this in my own way. You see, Mr. Westcott, it was all my doing. Stephen was in no way to blame for what happened. He used to come over in the evenings to see Harry. Not me, but the more I saw him, the stronger the feeling grew on my part. Harry was heavily insured in my favor.
Josie.
He never took me seriously, always scoffed at my love for the theater. I couldn't help thinking how opportune it would be if anything took him away from me.
Josie!
Do I make myself clear, Mr. Westcott?
Go on.
Well, the night Harry died, he had gone out in back of the house to get some air, and I was doing the dishes. And it came over me all of a sudden what I had to do. I dried my hands and went upstairs and got out an old flat iron I no longer used, and I came downstairs with it hidden under my apron and went out to where Harry was. Well, I stood there talking with him for a moment, and I waited until he turned his back to me, and then I did it.
You did what?
I swung the flat iron by its handle squarely at the back of his head. He didn't die right away, but he was unconscious, and I could see it was all over. He had a weak heart, you know. And, well, afterwards, I took the iron over in the vacant lot and buried it. And the rest happened as I told you. Stephen came around and we carried him into the house.
You mean you didn't notice the wound? Didn't it bleed?
Well, it did a little, but I washed it off.
I see.
And then I took some pinkish face enamel I had left over from the days when I was an actress, and I plastered that over the wound and even powdered it so it would be less noticeable. I made a good job of it because, after all, I do know something about those things, you know, makeup. So that's why the doctor never noticed it when he examined Harry's body.
Josie, I can't believe it. Forgive me, Mr. Westcott, but this is a terrible, terrible shock.
Well, now you know everything. I suppose you may as well drive me to police headquarters.
Why should I?
You mean you aren't going to turn me in?
That dent in his head could have been made by the men who exhumed the body. You and I are the only witnesses to that, Mrs. Archer.
Yes, but look here, can't they
tell? In this case, the body happens to be in a remarkably fine state of preservation. Besides, if I do you a favor, maybe you'll cut me in for a little of that sweepstakes ticket.
Oh, anything. Anything you like at all.
Good. I'll come back tomorrow and we'll talk it over. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Westcott, and thanks. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Good night, Mrs. Archer.
Good night.
Well, my dear.
Stephen.
I've got to do a little thinking, Josie. This changes things considerably.
It won't make any difference between us, will it, Stephen? I did it for us so we could be together.
But you, of all people, and going out there and then looking at his
body. But he was so well-preserved, Stephen. He just looked as if he was sleeping. That's peculiar.
What is?
Well, he's looking so well. After all, it's been some time. It's just like in the Emerald Snuff Box.
What?
The Emerald Snuff Box. You remember I played it for 33 weeks at the Court Theater, opposite Henry Dixie? That was how they knew that it was poison, because of the way the body looked after all that time.
Poisoner? Well, those bungling police doctors will never find it out. We can shut up that fool of a reporter with a sweepstakes ticket. That was a windfall anyway. We'll never miss it.
But, Stephen, we can't count on things turning out the way we want them to. I made that confession just to give us a little time. We could take a plane in the morning and be in South America in a few hours.
Oh, that'd be very foolish. No, my dear. Our best strategy is just to go on as we always have. I'll take the train into the office, you'll take your bath and sun lamp, and we'll be the same loving couple we've always been. Josie!
I'm up here, Stephen, in the bath.
Got any idea where my iron pills are? I went off without them.
They're on the sideboard in the dining room. You know perfectly well.
What's that?
I said they're on the sideboard in the dining
room. Can't hear you. Mind if I open the door just a bit?
No, Stephen, the sun lamp's right in front of the door. Wait till I move.
Is that you say?
I said don't open the door. The lamp, Stephen! Stephen, no! Ah!
Josie! Well, that's that. Now, who the devil is that? All right, I'm coming. Up with the buttercups and comes the sun.
Mr. Archer?
Yes.
My name's Madison, Bureau of Detectives.
Oh, yes, Inspector, come in. This is most opportune you're coming just at this time. I was about to telephone the police.
Oh?
The most terrible thing has happened to my poor wife.
Your wife?
She was in the bath taking her sun lamp treatment. Like a blundering fool, I opened the door and the lamp fell over into the tub. I ran downstairs to cut off the house current, but before I could get back, she must
have... Wait a minute. You went all the way downstairs to cut off the house current? Why didn't you just pull out the plug?
Oh, I don't know. I was panicky. I got confused. There was a dreadful glare of light, sparks flying all over the place. I was half blinded.
Where's she now?
Well, she's still in there. I was trying to get up my nerve to go in when the doorbell rang. I couldn't bear to see her like that, Inspector. Electrocuted. It's just too horrible.
Well, let's go up and have a look. They're probably too late, though.
Yes, Inspector, I'm afraid it is too late, but as you say, we must do all we can.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Archer, this certainly happened at an opportune time, as you say. A warrant has just been sworn out for your wife's arrest for the murder of her first husband, Harry Mead. What? This reporter here from the Bulletin says he got a confession out of her.
Hello?
Oh, poor Josie. Poor, poor Josie. Perhaps it was just as well it happened this way.
Is it, Stephen? Is it? it just as well.
Josie!
Well, Mrs. Archer, congratulations. You carried it off with flying colors.
What do you mean, carried it off?
By stars and crowns, Steve and I wasn't even in the tub. I just stood behind the door and screamed when the lamp went out.
Josie, you ought to be ashamed of yourself giving me a fright like that.
It's no good you're pretending any longer, Stephen. Mr. Westcott was absolutely right. You're nothing but a common murderer.
Josie, why, surely you don't believe
that's what my confession was for, you goose, to trap you. They know all about how you killed poor Harry, where you got the poison and everything, don't you, Inspector?
That's right, Mrs. Archer.
Why, you're worse than Sheldon Lewis was in the Iron Claw. You'd stoop to anything. My stars and crown, when I think what might have happened if Harry hadn't had on his new blue serge when he bought that sweepstakes ticket. Oh, officer, do your duty.
Josie. Dumb little Josie.
Well, I guess this about ties it. Come on, Archer. Let's go. Up on your feet.
Yes, Stephen. Up with the buttercups.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Before we hear again from Agnes Moorhead, the star of Postmortem, tonight's suspense play, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Here's a trick in taste magic that will help you win family praises, even for meals made of leftovers. To bring out the full flavor of any meal, to add color and zest to the table, serve Red Roma California Burgundy. A glass full of robust, full-bodied Roma Burgundy lends warmed over pot roast a new lease on taste, gives twice-served meatloaf that tempting first meal flavor. Yes, there's greater dining pleasure in simple meals served with the rich, satisfying goodness of Roma Burgundy. For superb Roma Burgundy makes plain foods taste great, makes great foods even better. And delicious Roma Burgundy can grace your table often, for Roma costs just pennies a glass. Get Roma Burgundy tomorrow. Give zest and character to your next meal. Insist on Roma. R-O-M-A. Roma Wines. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Agnes Moorhead. It's always like coming home again to do suspense. You know, Vincent Price came out to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer the other day to see a private showing of The Green Years with me, and afterwards he told me all about next Thursday's suspense show on which he's going to be the star. Be sure and listen in, because it sounds wonderful.
Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Vincent Price as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Produced by William Spear. For the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Suspense is broadcast from coast to coast and to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right. That was... Yeah, as you say, quite a diversion from the normal type of Cornell Woolrich story. And it does, as you also pointed out, kind of, it would work as Adventures of Sam Spade with a little modification. So anyway, Dr. Joe Webb, what else have you got on this one?
In previous episodes, we've talked about how you have to understand things in the context of their times. So there is a scene here where there is a sun lamp in the bathroom, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we know what's going to happen, right? But for many decades now, homes are required to have what's called a ground fault circuit interrupter so that if something goes into water, everything cuts off, right?
Yeah, you can't electrocute someone this way anymore.
Right. So this this particular situation would not work in today's modern home. But nonetheless, we understand at that time. So people are probably sitting at home saying, we know what's going to happen, right? this is not going to play out well, right? So some people at home would have suspected the plot was going to go in this way. I found it to be very funny how the new husband, when he goes to answer the door, knowing that the wife has been electrocuted, is so calm. And then he gets really animated when he realizes the police and that he actually tried to save her. So it's just a very funny, it's hard to think of somebody being electrocuted as funny, but in this particular circumstance, the way it plays
out. It's that wry gallows humor, yes.
Yes.
And Joe Kearns is so good at this.
And then, oh, he's superb at these kinds of things. He, it's a shame he passed away so young. He was in his mid-50s. He would have been an incredible radio convention guest.
Oh, yeah. Did anyone interview him? Is it known that there's an interview anywhere?
In a lot of ways, the hobby didn't exist at the time he passed away.
Well, he still could have been interviewed by somebody for something.
Yeah, but you know, there are print interviews from radio magazines, but they're puff pieces.
Nothing concrete usually
no,
in those.
No. All right, there's a name in the story. The name reference is Sheldon Lewis. That is an inside joke.
Elliot Lewis?
About Sheldon Leonard.
Oh, Sheldon Leonard. Lewis. Yeah, Sheldon Leonard and Elliot Lewis. Okay, I would have got that one. Yep.
Yes. So if you heard that, that's what that is. There are lots of inside jokes and suspense, and that's one of them. So that's basically it. I really enjoyed this episode. I had heard it years ago, and as I've been working on the blog, I listened to it again and saying, gosh, this is a lot better than I originally thought.
Well, I would agree with you because I transferred it years ago, and I don't remember liking anything about it except the fact that Agnes Moorehead and Joe Kearns were great actors and actresses. But now in hearing it yesterday, actually, for the first time in 40-some years, I thought it was much better. So, yes, you are correct. That's
so
good.
You listened
we get
yesterday.
To hear
is that like cramming for the test?
It is exactly cramming for the test. Yes, we are very busy here, and I basically, this is inside baseball stuff, but I basically come waltzing in here about 1 minute before time to record for the podcast. Usually, I have not heard the program that we're going to listen to in a long time, if not ever. And somehow we managed to make it work. So there you go. For you people wonder how this show gets done, that's how it gets done.
And there it is.
But it works.
You have
it
the
works.
Inside scoop.
Well, I hope it works. If it didn't work, we wouldn't have so many listeners. So we have lots of listeners, and that's good. We like all the listeners. We try to entertain them as best as possible. Anyway, all right. So post-mortem, we are done our post-mortem on post-mortem, and
yes,
we will be back next week with a strange tale, again by Cornell Woolrich, and Dr. Joe Webb will join us for that as well, and then we only have a couple more and we're done. But those last couple are pretty special, especially the second to the last one. I really like that one. So anyway, we'll let that be keeping you in suspense till we get there, but
right.
next
week's story has a very tragic backstory.
Uh-oh.
Which kind of ties in with the regular Woolrich story.
Okay.
So it's very interesting.
All right, well, we shall keep you in suspense until next week. And until next week, thank you, Dr. Joe Webb, for your contributions to the Good Old Days of Radio Show. You're always welcome here. You're a fountain of knowledge, and we really appreciate the time you spent getting all this trivia and backstory information to be able to present to the world now, some 60, 70 years later after these shows were first broadcast. Anyway, this is John Tefteller and the Good Old Days of Radio Show. See you next week.